Okay, we begin here on the top of Dalet Amud Aleph, two lines down. Mara continues to discuss the statement of Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya, who says that Mulda B'miktzat has a manifestation not only when the individual admits to a portion of the claim against him, but even when Edim generate that quote-unquote half an admission, which is that he denies the whole thing, but Edim come along and say, well, you owe half of what the claim is. He deems that to be the equivalent of Mulda B'miktzat, that would generate the need for a shvuah on behalf of the defendant in that case. And he says, I know that from a kal v'chomer. The Gemara already established why you wouldn't think that that was the case. And that is because of Rabbah. The way that Rabbah explained moda b'miktzat, that would only be applicable by an individual himself who is admitting to the fact that he owes a portion of it. That logic of the fact that he really does want to deny the whole thing. He does want to admit the whole thing, but he's in a bind. He has a chazakah in Adam, me'iz panav, b'fnei bal chovo, as well as on the other side that he needs to buy time to pay it back. But that's true when you're speaking about an individual who's admitting to it. That wouldn't be true by Edim, because there he remains steadfast in his denial of owing the money. It's only because the Edim come along. So that's the reason you would think not to extrapolate the din of modem miksat to the case of Edim that generate a miksat of an admission. The Gemara then says, then what is the kal v'chomer of Rabbi Chiya? Rabbi Chiya says you can learn it out of a kal v'chomer. That's what the Gemara is struggling with, which is that, well, first we discuss the fact that if he admits something or he does something to his peeve, Edim are stronger than that, more powerful than that, and therefore they should overcome that deficit by saying it's a kal v'chomer. If it's true by Hodat Piv, it certainly should be true by Edim. The Gemara in the end rejected that because Malapiv shekenu ba'chashab ha'zama. Piv also has a chumrah, or in a sense is more powerful. It cannot be overridden by Edim that come and testify against his claim or his admission, as well as that there's no hazama. There's no Edim zomamim by an individual who testifies about himself. Whereas by Edim, you do have these character traits. So then the Gemara moves on to a new track and says, let's learn from Ed Echad. Maybe we'll learn, just like an Ed Echad, even though it can't generate a monetary obligation, can generate a shvuah. And certainly, a deem which can generate a monetary obligation should be able to generate a chiyuv shvuah. Gemara says it's different. The Eid Echad generates a shvuah or the necessity for a shvuah to deny what he is saying. He makes a statement, the other party has to take a shvuah to negate the statement of the Eid Echad. By the Shnei Edim, in our case over here, they testify about him owing 50, and the guy's taking a shvuah about the other 50 that he is denying. He's not taking a shvuah to negate their statement. He's taking a shvuah to corroborate the other half, which is that he doesn't owe the other half of the money. So therefore, the Gemara rejected it, and that's what we're up to now. Again, what is this kal v'chomer, or what is the limud of Rabbi Chiya? Elamara papa, ati migilgul shvuah de'ed echad. Comes out of gilgul shvuah, is a concept that is developed in the Gemara in Sotah. We saw it in the Gemara in Kedushin as well, which is that when the woman answers, when the Kohen is speaking to the woman, she says, Amen, Amen, Amen twice. From that, the Gemara derives the fact that once you have someone in a position where they have to take a Shvuah, then you can add on other items to the Shvuah. So even though these other items by themselves would not be sufficient reason to generate a Shvuah, once you already have the guy taking a Shvuah, you can throw in everything else along with it. So here you have Eid Echad, which generates a shvuah, and then gilgul shvuah. So this Eid Echad who comes along and testifies against a party, that party will have to take a shvuah. Once we have him taking a shvuah, not only do we have him take a shvuah to negate the statement of the Eid Echad, but we also have him take shvuot about other matters or other issues here. They have to be shvuot that relate to the relationship of these two parties. It can't be that now we have him take a shvuah about things that have nothing to do with this case or nothing to do with their relationship. But once you have him in a position of shua, we can ask him to take a shua about broader aspects of their relationship. So now, ma de gilgul shua de eid echad shekein shua goreret shua. Wait a minute, that's not the same thing as our case over here. By the case of eid echad, the reason that you precipitate a second shua is because you have a first shua. The eid echad is able to generate a shua, and then that precipitates the ability to generate another shvuah. Tumar b'edim. De mamon kai mechayve. What about by edim? Edim do not generate a shvua. They can be mechayev mamon. So just because they can be mechayev mamon, who says they can also generate a shvua? The idea being here that the Eid Echad can generate shvuot that aren't directly related to his statement or to his testimony. So we're going to say the same thing over here. By the two Eidim that come along and say you owe 50 out of the 100, and we make him take a shvua on the other 50, or the denial, well, look, that looks like quote-unquote a Gilgul shvua, which is once we have him already in this case, take a shvua about this other matter. The Gemara says those are different. Eid Echad generates a shvua, and then you're adding on other shvuot on top of it. Shnei Eidim can obligate money, but they don't generate a shvuot so that you could tack on other shvuot over here. So that's a little difficult, that comparison. The Gemara says, no problem, piv yochiach. His own admission will see that. So by piv, which is modu b'mitzat, that's exactly what happens. He admits to owing half of what the claim is. He takes a shvuot on the denial aspect, that on the kfira part of it, he takes a shvua. So his hodat piv is the equivalent of what we're trying to do with the edim. The problem is that we saw before that piv is more chamur in some instances than shnei edim. So mala piv shkeino b'chachasha. Piv cannot be denied. Once he admits he's guilty, edim can't come along and exonerate him or say that you're not guilty. I mean, that if he says, I owe the money, even if edim come along and say you don't owe the money, once hodat madin kebeya edim dami, they can't deny that. But by two edim, if another two edim come along and argue with the first two edim, that's a chasha that can be blocked. Eid echad yochiach. Eid echad will prove that sheyesh no ba'chasha. It does have that weakness, the fact that you can't have a counter to the single eid. Umechai bo shvua. And it obligates him in a shvua. Maila eid echad shekena mashmeid hu nishba. That on what he testifies, he takes a shvua. Tomar ve'edim shamasha kafar hu nishba. But then the difference again between Eid Echad is that the shvua is directed against the statement, the testimony of that aid. Here you're asking us by the edim to take a shvua, not directed against their statement, but rather against the kfira, the denial that they don't address. That's where you're taking a shvua. Piv yochiach. That piv will take care of. V'chazar adin. And now we have what's called a tzada shavesh behen. Lo re'ize kreize, v'lo re'ize kreize. Each one of these items has a deficit in it that does not make it directly comparable to the case of edim. Pif, his own admission is the same in the fact that you're asking by his own admission for him to take a shua on the kfira, on the other aspect, which is the denial aspect. So too by the edim, you're asking for the same thing. But pif has a chumra, which is that it's not by hachasha. On the other hand, Eid Echad, which does have this concept of Hachasha associated with it, because it can be denied like the two Eidim, but the nature of the Shvua by Eid Echad is different than the nature of the Shvua by Shnei Eidim. By Eid Echad, the Shvua is to deny his testimony. By the Shnei Eidim, it is to deal with the Kfira. But if I put the two of them together, Hodat Piv, which is the Moda B'Mikzat, and the Eid Echad, the common denominator between them is that they come from a claim and a denial, vinishba, and it results in a shvua. So if I put those together, then I can say they come from a claim and a denial, vinishba, and they should be able to generate a shvua. So by putting them together, instead of learning out of one item, Eid Echad, or learning out of piv, if I join them together and say both of them result in a shvua. So now, both of those result in a shvua, what's the common denominator between them? The chumrot that we worried about before fall away because those two items, hodat piv and eid echad, don't have the same chumrot. They don't have the same characteristics. Therefore, if I take the common denominator between them, it will result in me learning out that shnei edim that come along and say, you owe 50 out of the 100 of the claim against you, that should also generate a shvua, and a shvua on the kfira aspect of it. And so that's how Rabbi Chiya will learn from this tzada shaveh. Now, we know that when you have a tzada shaveh, a common denominator, if you find something that is common to the items that are in this common denominator, that's not true in another item, then you can't learn the other item out from it, because then it becomes a chumrah, that both issues or both limudim have in them. And that's what the Gemara says here. Ma l'tzad shebeh sheben shekein lo huchzak kafran. In the case of Eid Echad, and in the case of Hodat Piv, even if he's found to be lying, or he's found to be not telling the truth, we do not consider him to be a denier, or basically he does not get the shame of someone who is no longer trusted. Again, by Modem and Miktzat, we already established the fact that the reason he has to take a shvua is because he's trying to wiggle his way out, to buy time. He's not trying not to pay the loan back. He just needs more time to pay the loan back. So we don't deem him to be a kofer or someone who does not tell the truth. And Eid Echad only has a right to generate a shvuah. He does not have a right to establish that this person is a kafran, a denier, someone who is trying to work his way out of obligations. Tomar be'edim, shkein chukzak kafran. By Edim, if two Edim come along and testify to the fact that he is a denying a claim and that he's a liar, then he loses his status as being Naaman. He's no longer trustworthy because now we've established the fact that he's willing to lie and deny obligations that he has. Mar says that's not true either. Obeidim, Miuchzak Kafran, is it really true that when he denies a claim that then he becomes a Kafran and loses his Naamanut? Hamaravidi Ba'avin, Amaravchista, a kofer b'milve kasher le'edut. Someone who denies a loan or an outstanding loan does not get the status of a rasha, and therefore he is kasher le'edut. He does not lose his standing or his nemanut as regard to testimony. B'pikadon pasul le'edut. Whereas by a pikadon, he is pasul be'edut. Now, the reason being that by a milve, the way Rashi noted is, came into milve lahutzah nitna. Milve is given to expend. When someone lends you money, they expect you to utilize the money. They're not lending you the money to put into your bank account. They're lending you the money in order to utilize the money and to spend it. And therefore, he knows that when it comes to the repayment of the loan, the person might be in a bind. He may not have the money. And that is a claim that is not unreasonable. It's a claim that is uncomfortable. It's a claim that he's failing to live up to the requirements of the loan, but he's still, it's plausible that he doesn't have the money currently to pay back the obligation or pay back the debt, but not that he, the underlying psychology in the reason that he's denying it is not because he has no intention of paying it back, or at least we can attribute his denial not to the fact that he doesn't want to pay it back, but to the difficult circumstance that he finds himself in. There's a way to give him a danim to the kaf zchut over here. Therefore, we won't deem him as a eino neman, someone who is no longer believed, someone who can't come and testify. The Gemara sees a duress that's causing him to lie, not that he lacks nemanut in general. On the other hand, by a pikadon, if the guy denies having the pikadon, over there you can't say that the pikadon was given the otzanit now. The pikadon was given to you for safekeeping, and you need to return it. Now all of a sudden, why are you lying and say you never got the pikadon? Is that because you don't have it? Is that because you are waiting to pay it back later? No, it's because you're stealing it. It's because you're taking it. Now Rashi does say there is one instance by pikadon where you could create the same scenario, and that's aveda. If he lost it, where he lost it and now he wants to buy time to find it. So in that case, it's similar to the case of a milve, where the denial is to buy time rather than to deny the whole claim. So Rashi says that later on, the Gemara on Daf Hey will establish that the Edim saw that he had it in hand. After he denied having it, they say, what do you mean you don't have it? What do you mean you were never given it? We saw it in your house. So we saw that you were in possession of it. So now, the denial there is a clear lack of nemanut. We can't attribute his denial to any duress or to trying to do the right thing, but he just can't do it. It's simply that this guy is lying and he's stealing the item. Once that's the case, he becomes a chukzak kafran and he loses his nemanut. He can no longer be an aide or testify in a case because he's lost all nemanut in that case. So therefore, the Gemara says that based on that, there is no common denominator that would block you from bringing the two Edim over here. We said maybe by the case of Eid Echad and by Hodat Piv, he can't be Chukzak Kafran. So maybe by Edim, you are Chukzak Kafran. The Gemara says, no, the Edim that we're speaking about here are in a situation, Modeh B'Miktzat, in a Milveh. That's a case where you would not be Chukzak Kafran because of the fact that Shtei Edim and Milveh don't generate a Chutzah Kafran. Only a Pikadon would generate that, not a Milveh. Ela Pari Chachi. You should ask the question in the following manner. Ma Letzad HaShaveh Shebehen, the Eid Echad and Hodat Piv have this common denominator between them, which would then prevent us learning out Shnei Edim. Shkein Einan B'Torat Hazama. Neither of them have a din of Hazama. Tomar Be'edim, Sheishnan B'Torat Hazama. You say that about Edim, that they do have a Torat Hazama. Now, Hazama is interesting over here. In terms of two Edim, we know the concept of Hazama, which is other two Edim come along and say, Imanu Aitem, you were with us. They do that. The second set of Edim are automatically believed. The first Edim then are penalized with you do to them what they were trying to do to the other party, and they are taken off the case, meaning that they're no longer believed in this case. When it comes to Odat Piv, when it comes to the person's own admission, clearly there's no hazama, because it doesn't matter what the Edim say. If the guy says, I was there and I owe you the money, and the Edim comes say, you were with us, it doesn't really matter. That won't change the fact. Once he admits to the obligation, the Edim can't change that scenario. The Eid Echad, Hazama does not apply to an Eid Echad, because we don't do to an Eid Echad kasher ratzah la'asot la'achiv, like he wanted to do to his fellow Jew. You can't do that, or you don't do that to an Eid Echad. So there's a lack of Hazama. So what the Gemara is saying is that Eid Echad and Odat Piv have the same common denominator, which is that they have this Chumrah, that there's no Hazama by them, which is not true by Edim. So how can you learn that Edim from them? Now, as Tosfot points out over here, in a Tzedah Shaveh, whenever you have a Tzedah Shaveh, we look for even the smallest item to undo it. Meaning that if you don't require a full logic or something that's completely makes it that they are different than the other case, you just need anything that slightly makes it that you have some common denominator between them and a common Chumrah between them, and that ruins the logic. Because the whole basis for the Limud is the fact that each one of these items is different enough that their chumrot cancel each other out, and you're left with a common denominator. If you could find something between them that is shared, that is not applicable by other cases, that ruins the whole logic of the argument of a common denominator. And that's what the Gemara is doing here, that Eid Echad and Hodat Piv are not subject to Hazama, whereas Shnei Edim are subject to Hazama. Gemara says, Alokasha, Reb Chiya, Torat Hazama, Lo Parich. He doesn't think that this is a fair question. The reason being that by Eid Echad, there is Hazama, but there isn't Hazama. That is that if Edim come along and say to an Echad, Manu Haita, that you were with us, that will prevent this Eid from testifying anymore. That Eid no longer is believed in the case. That Eid is no longer relevant to the case. So in terms of Hazama, they do have the ability to be Mevatel, the testimony of the Eid Echad. What fails over there in terms of Hazama is that we don't do to him kasher batzal asut l'achiv, that he wanted to do to his fellow Jew. We don't do that. So now you have a tension in Eid Echad. Is Eid Echad subject to Hazama, or is Eid Echad not subject to Hazama? Well, from one perspective, he is subject to Hazama, because his Eidut is ruined by Eidim Zomimim that come along and say, Imanu Aita, his Eidut is gone now. He can no longer testify in this case. On the other hand, it doesn't look like a classic case of Eidim Zomimim, where then you penalize those Eidim with the that you do to them exactly what they wanted to do to their fellow Jew, that you do not apply by an Eid Echad. So the question is, why not? So the Havamina was, the why not, is because he's not subject to Hazama. He's just not under the rubric of Hazama, and that's why we don't do it. And that's what the Gemara said at first. Hodat Piv and Eid Echad have something in common. Hazama is not applicable to them. It's not something that is meaningful, because they're not in that category at all. What the Gemara answers on behalf of Rabbi Chiya is, that's just not true. There is Hazama by Eid Echad. It's just manifests differently. Hazama comes by an Eid Echad because, first of all, it's Mevatel Zeidut. But more importantly, you can't do to him what he was trying to do to his friend. What does an Eid Echad do? An Eid Echad does not obligate in any way. He does not cause penalties in any way. He does not cause money to move. He only causes the necessity for a Shvuah. So now, how do you do that to an Eid Echad? He came to say, you take a Shvuah. So now the Edim come and say, Imanu Aita, you were with us. So now what do you want to do to him? You're going to force him to take a Shvuah? That's not a penalty that makes any sense. And so the lack of Azama here is not because he's not subject to Edim Zomamim. It's just that there is no way in Mitzvah to have him have Kasher Zamam Lasod Achiv, that you can't create that scenario over there. So what happens is, whatever is applicable applies, which is that Edim Zomamim do two things. They ruin the testimony of those Edim, and then they, number two, they cause them to be penalized whatever they were trying to do. So now, in that case, the Eid Echad, in terms of Hazama, his testimony is ruined. His testimony is negated. That's one part or aspect of Hazama, and that does apply to him, and that is manifest, because his testimony will be wiped out of the case. That will not apply to him, because it's just not practical in this case. There's just no manifestation of it. So that's the tension over here, which is that the Gemara is asking the question from the perspective, there is no Hazama by Eid Echad. Rabbi Chiya's retort is, there is Torah Hazama. There is Hazama, it just manifests itself differently because by Eid Echad, there's no way to penalize him and do Kasher Zamam Lasod Achiv. And so that's the tension, but that's the way that he answers the question. Tosfot says over here, with regards to the Seder Shaveh, V'im Tomar, Kofra Kol Yochiach, Kofra Kol should disprove this whole case. Shaldai Taina Vikfira, it comes to a claim and a denial, and there you are Patur. So we have one paradigm which goes against the paradigm that we're setting up over here. So Tosfot says, Kofra Kol is different than these paradigms. By Eid Echad and Modeh B'Miksat, the case of Taina and Kfira are different, because he says by Eid Echad, Machisho, Modeh B'Miksat, Nireh K'Mishaker, it looks like he is lying. Ulekach Yeshvua, and that's why there's a Shvua. So Kofra Kol doesn't fall into that category of these similar cases, where all these cases look like the guy might be lying, or he might be vacillating on his position because of either he's Modeh B'Miksat or there's Eid Echad. By Kofra Bakol, there the reason he might be Patur is because he doesn't admit to anything. There's no evidence here to indicate that he's lying about his position. Therefore, Tosfot says that Kofra Bakol is not relevant as a paradigm in this scenario. So the Gemara says, Ella Dikamar, Batana Tuna. So now the Gemara says, well, let's look at this. This is the problem we have with Rabbi Chiya. We came up now with the quote-unquote Kal V'Chomer. It's not exactly a Kal V'Chomer, it became a Tzadah Shaveh. But we found a way to learn that by two Edim, you should be able to generate a Shvua equivalent to Modeh B'Miktzat. Learn that out of Eid Echad and Hodat Piv. And that is a way that Rabbi Chiya could plausibly learn this out. The question is, Rabbi Chiya makes a second statement, which is our Mishnah is supportive of his position. V'Tana Tuna. That's where the Parich. That's what you should ask a question on. Elo dekamar v'tana tuna mi domi. So when it comes to the proof that he brings from a Mishnah, is it really similar now? Is his proof a good proof? Hatam the malve itle sahade, the love leitle sahade, the lo mesikle velo mide. In the case of Modeh B'Miktzat, the creditor has witnesses to support him. The love, the borrower, the debtor, has no witnesses to support him. That's why we're in this predicament. The creditor says, you owe me 100. The debtor says, I owe you nothing. Two Edim come along and say that you owe him 50. So the creditor has Edim to support his position. The Loveh has nobody supporting his position. That's why he has to pay or take a Shvuah or do something here, because of the fact that the case is coming in against him, is weighed against him. So he has nothing to respond with. He has no retort to those Edim, because if he did have Edim, then he wouldn't have to pay the 50, because then it would be an Edut B'Hachasha, or he'd have some support for his position. Di Avolei Sade, the Lovet, because if he had the debtor had witnesses, the Lo Mesikle, that he didn't lend it, the Lo Mide, Lo Bay Rabbi Chiya, the Shtubuye, then Rabbi Chiya would not have to force him to take a Shvuah. Meaning that if the creditor has Edim say that you owe 50 out of the 100, the debtor has Edim say that you owe nothing and he never took out the loan, then in that case, there's no reason to force the Loved to take a Shvuah. The debtor to take a Shvuah. There's nothing compelling us to make him take a Shvuah, because the Edim are in a sense offsetting each other. So it must be the scenario is where the creditor has Edim, the debtor has no Edim. And that's why we want to generate a Shvuah. Hocha, in our case of the Mishnah, that's not true. Keicha de Anan Sade Bahai, Anan Sade Bahai. Just like we have witness to this party, we also have witness to this party. And despite that fact, he still takes a Shvuah. Remember, in our Mishnah, Shnayim Ochsim B'Talit, we said that when they come in holding the Talit, Anansadeh. We are witness to the fact that they have a claim here or some sort of admission here. I mean, that we have witnesses to the fact that they own half of it or that they are denying half of the claim that is there. That witness is good for both parties. That witness is not just for one side of the case. That witness applies to both sides of the case because Anansadeh. It's a conclusion that from what we see, it's as if we have testimony. But we see the same thing for both parties. Both claimants have that same status. And there you take a shvua. So that's different than our scenario. In our scenario, the shvua is generated despite the fact that they are on equal footing. We still generate a shvua. You want to generate a shvua in a case where there is a creditor with witnesses and a debtor without witnesses. So from our Mishnah, you can't prove anything to your case. Your case is very different than the case of the Mishnah. Yeah, in both cases you want to have a shvua, but the two aren't similar. It's not what you can extrapolate from our case to that case of the milveh. And so that's what the Gemara says, is that Rabbi Chiya's proof doesn't seem to be a good proof to his position. Elik yitmar v'tanatuna a'idach to Rabbi Chiya yitmar. When Rabbi Chiya says our Mishnah is a proof to his position, it wasn't about this statement, that two edim who cause a payment or a necessity to deal with half of the claim that generates a shvua, that's not proven from our Mishnah. What's proven from our Mishnah is this alternate or other statement of Rabbi Chiya, which is, Dama Rabbi Chiya, manali biyadecha. He says, you owe me 100. Ba'alo omer, in the chabiyadi, ele nun zuz. You only have in my hands 50. Behelach. And here it is, chayav. So now, we have a creditor coming along and saying to the debtor, you owe me 100. The debtor admits to 50 of it. In a normal case, that would be considered a modeh b'miktzat and require a shvua. But in this case, it's a little different. Over here he says, yes, I did have a loan from you, but it was only 50, and it's right here, take it. So now the way Rashi states it is that he never expended that money. He says, yeah, you lent me 50, I never spent it, and here it is, take it back, heilach. Lo hotzotim, v'hein shelcha, I never expended them, they're yours, v'makom makom shame. Meaning that since he did not utilize the money that was lent to them, they really never left the possession of the creditor. Since they didn't leave the possession of the creditor, he basically says that that part of the loan, or that part of the claim, is not really a claim. So what he does is he changes the case from being a case of modeh b'miktzat, into a case where he's bifurcating the case and saying, about 50, here's your money. It becomes exactly like a pikadon. You're 50, here it is. The other 50, I'm a kofer bakol. So in that case or that scenario, you would think that he was not a modeh b'miktzat because we bifurcate the two pieces. We say about the 50, he is giving it back as if it never existed, as if the case never opened on that 50. The other 50 is a kofer bakol. Never shouldn't have to take a shvua. Despite that, Rabbi Chiya says, Chayav, my time, why? Behelach nami kimodeh miktzat atayin adami. Behelach, when you hand back the money, that's not like you split the case in half. It's the equivalent of being modeh b'miktzat. And since it's the equivalent of being modeh b'miktzat, then we have to take or force him to take a shvua. Now, Rashi's claim over here, you can see there's a little aleph of the gra in Rashi's statement about the helach. That he says, lo atzutim, I never expended them. That's why they're considered halach and take them wherever they are. The Gra says that the Ran disagrees with this and says that milveh by definition is lo atzah nitna. It has nothing to do with whether you actually spent the money. When the creditor hands you the money, it's as if the money left his hands and it's expended already. It doesn't matter whether you personally expended it. That's the nature of a loan. And therefore the Ran says that it has nothing to do with the milveh, but dafka, but pikadon. That is the case. That this din only applied by a pikadon and not by a milveh, because all milveh is lahotza nitna, and so by definition, halach may not apply by a milveh, it only applies to a pikadon. Like you were saying, a pikadon, by definition, it remains in your possession, and therefore, if you never expended it, or you say, here it is, it's as if it never left the possession of the owner. That's Rashi versus the Ran. You could formulate that even according to the Ran, who says that milveh lahotzah nitna, you could still say maybe halach should apply. Because what you could say is that since he has the money readily available, and he basically hands it to him, He's not saying that the loan was a larger amount. He's basically carving out a portion of the case and saying that portion of the case is no issue at all. Here's your money. Take it back. The other part of the case then becomes independent. It's not like he's saying, yeah, I owe you 50 and I'm denying 50. He's saying 50 is gone. Take that out of the case. Here's your money. Okay, now the other 50 you want to discuss, that I'm a kofer bakol. So you could formulate it, even according to the Ran, you could formulate a way where it would apply to milveh as well. But you should know that that difference exists. Rashi says that milveh lo tzanit is only triggered by the fact that you expended the money. If you don't expend it, it looks like a pikadon. The Ran says that's not the case. All milveh, all loans are lo tzanit, and therefore this din is only applicable by a pikadon. So that's the shita Rabbi Chia. Now, Tani Tuna, he's going to prove it from our Mishnah. Shnayim oksim b'talit, ba'ocha came into tofis, anan sade demad tofis helachu. Because over here, we see what they're holding. We see what they have in hand. And that's the equivalent, what they're holding onto is the equivalent of helachu. Biktani yishava. And he says, yishava. So what we're saying is that even though the Mishnah doesn't look like a case of modeh b'miktzat because of the helach aspect of it, nevertheless, we still require a shvua, or in essence, we're saying that helach does not have application to deny the fact that this is a case of modeh b'miktzat. So Rashi does something unusual over here. Rashi says that the proof from our Mishnah goes back to the original case of Rabbi Chia, which is when you have two edim. Creditor said you owe 100, debtor says I owe nothing, the two edim come along and say you owe 50. So there Rabbi Chia says that's the equivalent of a modeh b'miktzat. So what Rashi says is, you see here that when two edim come along, it's the same thing as being modeh. It's the same thing as modeh b'miktzat. That's the conclusion from the first statement of Rabbi Chia. So then Rashi takes that and now applies it to our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, the equivalent case is a guy comes in and says, Kula Shali. The other guy says, Kula Shali. They're both making a claim for 100% of it. The other party is denying it. By saying 100% of it is mine, you're saying 0% belongs to the other party. And now we have Edim come along and say, no, you only have 50 of it, or you owe 50 of it because you're muchzak in 50 of it. You're holding 50 of it. So it's the equivalent of Edim coming along and say, you owe 50. So now what Rashi says is, Rabbi Chia says, our Mishnah, where the Edim come along and say, you owe 50, there is a Shvu'ah. And that 50, we said Edim are just like Hoda. Edim are just like the equivalent of Modeh b'miktzat. And so from our Mishnah, you can prove that a modeh b'miktzat of Helech is considered a modeh b'miktzat, then you will have to take a Shvu'ah. The obvious deficit or problem in Rashi's explanation is, it assumes that our Mishnah works according to the first statement of Rabbi Chia. But didn't the Gemara just say we had a problem with using our Mishnah to prove the first statement of Rabbi Chia? And now we're continuing and saying, oh yeah, based on that first statement of Rabbi Chia, we can learn the Mishnah in this way that it'll support the second view of Rabbi Chia. But that means that you're still utilizing it in the way that we did for the first statement of Rabbi Chia. And that is very problematic, and that's what Tosafot challenges Rashi on. He says, I don't understand. The Gemara itself couldn't prove the fact that the first way of Rabbi Chia can be proven from our Mishnah. How can you say now that the second statement of Rabbi Chia uses the first statement to prove the second statement? It's building on the fact that you think our Mishnah is similar to that case when the Gemara just denied that fact. So therefore, Tosafot says that he thinks that that's a dochak, and then he says that yesh lomar the anan sade lav davka. The fact that we say it's as if there are witnesses over here is not absolute. It's a lav davka. The ma'ida tofis mechashvin alei hashka tvei me'adat edim. Chashiv ki'ilu modilei to the dehu. Then we're changing this. It's not simply that it's the admission or it's like edim. We're treating it as if that it is literally that he made an admission. So what Tosfot says is that we're using code words here, but code words that don't mean what they meant before. In the previous time when we say anan sade, we meant that hair holding onto the garment or whatever it is, the talit that they have, is the equivalent of the edim coming along and testifying to that fact. Well, that's not meaningful in our case, because our case is talking about Hoda, where he's speaking himself. So that's what Tosfot says. When we use the term anan sade, don't take it literally. It doesn't mean like we have witnesses that he's doing this, but rather, it's as if he admitted. That's what the Gemara means. Anan sade is not that they're as if they're witnesses, and then you have to extrapolate from that to say, well, witnesses are just like admission. No, when they say anan sade, it means like hodat piv. And that's why it works over here. So that's how Tosafot reads it. Whereas you can look over here that the Gra brings an alternative to Tosafot's view and says that it has nothing to do with hodat over here, but rather to do with what is the status of an item that is in hand. And therefore, the proof is from the fact that the way that Rav Sheshet, in a minute we're going to see, describes it, can be undermined by the Mishnah, is more supportive of Rabbi Chiya's view of the Mishnah. So there are ways to read the Mishnah as being a proof to Rabbi Chiya, without going through the original Rabbi Chiya like Rashi does, and that will be the reason that our Mishnah is supportive of Rabbi Chiya. But Rav Sheshet Amar Helech Patur. Sheshet disagrees with Rabbi Chiya, and Rav Sheshet says that when he hands it back, it's as if this case was split. It's as if the case is no longer a modu b'miksat, but rather one case of complete admission and one complete case of complete denial. And Halach is patur from a shvua, does not generate a shvua of modu b'miksat. My taima came in damar lehalach hanezuzay the kamodi gavavayu command the nakidlu milve dummy. It's as if the creditor has them in hand. It's as if that case is closed. Be'ina chamishim alo modi, and the other 50 he makes no admission. He's a complete denial of the other 50. Therefore, you don't have a modu b'miksat, and you don't have a shvua over here. Ula Rav Sheshet kasha matnitin. For Rav Sheshet, our Mishnah is problematic. Our Mishnah, if it's supportive of Rabbi Chiya, is problematic for Rav Sheshet. Amarcha Rav Sheshet matnitin takanat chachamim hi. The Mishnah is the takanat chachamim, which we saw before from Rabbi Yochanan. That the reason for the shvua in the Mishnah is not modu b'miksat. It has nothing to do with a shvua deoraita. It has to do with a shvua that's an institution of the chachamim. So, Enoch and Ami, you're right. Our Mishnah looks like it's supportive of Rabbi Chiya, but it's not really supportive of Rabbi Chiya because the nature of the shvua in the Mishnah is a shvua derabanan, not a shvua deoraita. And it's for what Rabbi Yochanan said. The reason is that we don't want people going around and grabbing other people's avedot and then trying to get a claim on it. We force them to take a shvua to verify their position or validate their position. But not because there's a modeh b'miksat over here, there's a case of halach over here. So that's how Rav Sheshet deals with it. Be'idach, Rabbi Chiya, how's he going to deal with this claim of Rav Sheshet that it's only a shvua derabanan? In, you're right. Takanach tachamim hi, it is only a shvua derabanan. But nevertheless, mihu, iamart bishlama midoraita halach chayav. If you say in a doraita situation that halach would be chayav, then mitakne rabbanan shvua kein doraita. Then in our Mishnah, they would impose a shvua that is patterned after the shvua doraita. Elohim might be doraita halach patur. But if you hold like you, Rav Sheshet, that halach min haTorah does not generate the equivalent of a modu b'miksat or a chiyuv shvua doraita, mitakne rabbanan shvua, the leta kabata b'doraita, they're going to create a shvua that doesn't exist in the Torah. This is an important principle. Rav Soloveitchik really, really followed this to the T, which is that anytime you find an institution or a creation, derabanan, you have to find a paradigm, midoraita. Or you have to find something that already exists upon which the rabbanan are creating whatever their imposition, minhag, or takana is. For instance, he does that by the Avelut of the Sfirat HaOmer. He had a very particular view about what the Avelut consisted of, because he says, you have to pick. If you're creating an Avelut in the Sfirat HaOmer, which is a new takana, a new gzerah, or a new minhag that is established, it's got to be patterned after an existing form of Avelut. So you have Avelut to Shiva, Avelut to Shloshim, Avelut to Shtemisre Chodesh. It's got to look like one of those. And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik believed that it was like the Avelut of Shtemisre Chodesh, and therefore it has all the rules of Avelut of Shtemisre Chodesh. It has Kulot, Kumra. But he very much believed in this idea that you have to follow a paradigm that already exists. Here, that's what the Gemara is saying. You have a Shvua that's the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan can't just institute Shvuot out of the blue, create a new institution of Shvua. The Shvua has got to be based on something that already exists, or is patterned after something that exists. It's obviously not going to be exactly like it, because then otherwise you'd be chayav the shvua d'oraita. But it's got to have some of the features that are similar to a shvua d'oraita. And that's what Rabbi Chiya says. If a scenario in our Mishnah which looks like halach, and in that case it's not exactly halach, because there are differences between the Mishnah and the case of halach, but nevertheless it looks, or it's similar to it, then I can understand why you would generate a shvua d'rabanan. Because midoraita halach would be a mode of a miksat and would generate a shvua doraita. Therefore, a Mishnah, which is similar in nature to that, should also have a shvua derabanan. The other hand, if you believe that Halach midoraita is completely patur, then now you're taking a case in our mission, which is similar to Halach, not exactly like it, and instituting a shvua on top of that. When there is no shvua, even if it was a doraita, even if it was all the trappings that you require min haTorah, it still would not generate a shvua. How can the Rabbanan then come and institute a shvua for something that is similar to something doraita that you would be patur for? That doesn't make sense. It's as if you're instituting something completely new or a totally new category of shvua. And that they were not willing to do. The truth is that Dinei Derabanan come up in two different forms. And that is a chakira in Dinei Derabanan, which is certain Dinei Derabanan come to expand or surround a Din Doraita. Certain Dinei Derabanan are a new creation that is not connected directly to any Din Doraita. The Gemara is saying that even in those creations that are not necessarily directly created, connected to something d'oraita, it's still got to be patterned after a paradigm d'oraita, and not something that is just out of thin air that you're putting together such a concept or shvua. And so Rabbi Chiya says that even though the Mishnah is only a takana d'rabanan, it only works if it's paralleled after something that is chayav d'oraita, which is what I'm saying, halach is chayav. According to you, Rav Sheshit, where there is no such paradigm d'oraita, it's very difficult to understand why the Chachamim are instituting a shvua in this case. Meitavei. So now we challenge this idea of halach. Slaim dinarim. So he has a contract in which it says, you owe so-and-so slaim. You owe so-and-so dinarim. Only thing missing from the contract is the number. They have the coinage, the currency, but it lacks any number. Now, the number, the slaim and dinarim are written in plural. So the minimum of a plurality would be two. So our underlying assumption here is that when it says slaim or dinarim, that means two, because otherwise they should have written a number there. Omer malve omer chamesh. The malve says, I lent you five. Velove omer shalosh. And the debtor says, I owe you three. Shimon ben Elazar omer hoil vehodeb miksat atana yishava. It's a classic case of modem and mixat. You have a claim for five, an admission of three, modem and mixat. You got to take a shvua d'oraita of modem and mixat. Rabbi Kiva omer, enu elo k'meshiv aveda u'pator. This guy is doing him a favor. He's meshiv aveda over here in your pator. Because the contract says minimum of two because it has no number in it. And that's the only thing the contract corroborates. That means when the guy comes and says three, he's not Modeh b'miksat, he's a meshiv aveda. He's giving more than he's obligated according to the contract or the letter of the contract. So why should we penalize him with a shvua of a modeh b'miksat? The claimant, the malva here, has nothing to stand on. He has no way to make the claim of five. The only thing we have is the debtor's admission of three, but his admission is against a proof of two. So he's like a meshiv aveda. Whatever he gives beyond the two is like a voluntary offering to the creditor. And there should be no modeh b'miksat over here. Mar says, Tani miyat. But let's look at this breita. Rabbi Shimon Elazar omer, ho v'hodeh b'miksat atana yishava. Then he has to take a shua. Why? Taima damar shalosh. That's only because he said three. Hashtaim patur. Had he said two, he would have been patur, even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. V'ashtar d'kemodi b'helachu. So that shtar looks like a case of helach. Ushmamina Elach Patur, and from that you would conclude that Elach is Patur, and that presents a problem for Rabbi Chia. Let's think about this. Creditor has a claim for five, the debtor says three. Those three make him into Amodeh B'miksat. The reasoning now, what the Gemara is saying, is that Shimon Elazar says the two are written in the contract. The two are the equivalent of Elach, because the two, he can't deny, because of the fact that they're in the contract, and he can basically say they're yours, or it's a given that I owe two. So now, what Rabbi Shimon Elazar says is the extra one that you mentioned afterwards, the third one, is the modeh b'miksat. That's what generates the chiyuv shvua of modeh b'miksat, is because you're saying more than the contract would have obligated. That's your admission. But that implies, had you only said two, that it would not be considered to be modeh b'miksat. Why not? Creditor's asking for five, you're saying, no, I owe you two. That's a case of modeh b'miksat. The answer is because the shtar supports two. That means that when you admit to the two, you're not admitting to anything, you're just saying halach. Your two is what the contract gives you, take it. That's what you deserve, that's what you can have. But that shows you that by halach, you would be patur. Because in the case of two, even Rav Shimon Elazar believes you're chayav in a shvua here from modeh b'miksat, says that's only when three. But at two, no modeh b'miksat. That would be supportive of Rav Sheshit's view or against Rabbi Chia's view. Now the truth is that Rabbi Chiya is a Tana. Right? Rabbi Chiya was Rav's uncle, lives at that transition generation. He is a Talmid of Rabbi, but he's still deemed to be a Tana. Nevertheless, despite the fact that he is a Tana, the Gemara is asking a question from a Tanaic work, like Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shimon Elazar. That could be because Rabbi Chiya is such a late Tana, it's not seen appropriate that he's arguing on much earlier Tanaim, where there's only two opinions laid out, and all of a sudden he comes up with a third opinion. That's a little bit strange. Now, it might be that he could be Machria, or he can deal with the Tanaim, or possibly argue on a Tana, but if you have a ready-made Machloket already, and those two Tanaim don't subscribe to your position, now you come create a new position, that seems a little strange, and that's why the Gemara is pushing against Rabbi Chiya, despite the fact that Rabbi Chiya is a Tana. The other thing that you need to focus on here is that the way that this is structured, you have Rabbi Shimon Elazar speaking, and then Rabbi Akiva speaking. That's problematic for two reasons. The first of which is, Rabbi Shimon Elazar is younger than Rabbi Akiva. He's in the generation after Rabbi Akiva. Number two is, Rabbi Shimon Elazar is a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. Whenever we have a Mishnah set up, in generally, or a Mishnah, it's an egg work, we always bring the Rebbe first, and the Talmid second if the Talmid disagrees with the Rebbe. Over here you have Rabbi Shimon Elazar being brought first, Rabbi Akiva being brought second. So two things are problematic here. First of all, you have a Talmid arguing on his Rebbe, and not only is the Talmid arguing on his Rebbe, the Talmid's position is brought first. That's unusual, or I would say the improper literary style for a Tanaic work. Therefore, there are those that want to say that it's not Rabbi Akiva, but rather Rabbi Yaakov is the author of the second position over here. That helps for something that's going to be coming up in the sugya, which is Tosfot points out, the Gemara here is going to attribute a position to Rabbi Akiva, which Rabbi Akiva does not subscribe to. And so if you make it Rabbi Yaakov, that solves the problem, because it's not Rabbi Akiva. Although, the problem is that we don't find any outside corroboration of the fact that it should be Rabbeinu Yaakov. Meaning that would mean that we should find other works, whether it's in Tosefta, in Breitot, or somewhere else in Shas, where Rabbi Yaakov would be quoted in this position, and we don't find that at all. And that's why the people don't favor to making that girsa change, despite the difficulties in the structure of this Breita. As Tosfot points out, there are times where it does happen that way, or there are times where that style is changed. So now Gemara says, look, the olam emelecha shtayim chayav. Even if he said two, he would be chayav. V'haydektani shalosh. So then why do Rabbi Shimon Elazar say when you say three, you make a shvua? Why didn't he say two? That would have been a bigger chiddush. If he said two, you take a shvua. Fuke mid Rabbi Akiva, to come to deny the position of Rabbi Akiva. Damar meshiva vedavi. Upatur. Because Rabbi Akiva says, not only is he not a modu b'mikzat, he's a meshiva veda. And Rabbi Akiva says you are a patur in that case. So Rabbi Shimon Elazar wants to come to say, not only by two is he a modu b'mikzat, even by three is a modu b'mikzat, and he's certainly not a meshiva veda. Kamash Milan, the modu b'mikzat, the taina avi v'chayav. That's what Rabbi Shimon Elazar is coming to do, is trying to deny Rabbi Akiva's position and say that he's not a Meshiva Veda by the case of three. According to Rabbi Akiva, if you gave two, you're not a Meshiva Veda anymore, because two are what you're obligated to do through the Ishtar. Iochi, if that's the case, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, hold the Ode Mixer Atana Yishava, Avze Yishava Mibayle. Why is he saying that since he's a Mode Mixer, he takes a Shvua? His wording should have been this way. Avze Yishava. Also, this guy takes a Shvua. A person who admitted to two takes a shvua. And also someone who did three takes a shvua. That's the way he should have worded it in the position that he was giving. The fact that he says the reason for the shvua is that it's modu b'mikzat makes it sound like this is the case of modu b'mikzat, and the case of two would not be a case of modu b'mikzat. El olam shtayim patur. You have to say that shtayim is patur because the wording of Rabbi Shimon Elazar doesn't support saying that shtayim is chayav. Ve'elach chayav. And we can hold like Rabbi Chiya that Eilach is Chayav, Vishani Ocha. And the case here is different. Kamisayile Shtora. Because over here, the Shtar supports his position. So basically, what we're saying is that generally, Eilach is the equivalent of Modu B'Mikzat. And when you say Eilach, you're still Chayav Eishvua. In our instance, it's an exceptional case. Because the Eilach here is generated by a Shtar. It's not simply that he's saying, here, take it. He has a Shtar telling that that's the case. Inami. Vishem De'avle Shtar Shibud Karkaot. Because shtar is something that generates a lien on the property. And as we know, the Gemara learns in places that from a klal prat to klal, or riboy miyot to riboy, the fact that karkaot are not subject to a shvuah. And so therefore, even though there is a motive of mixa, motive of mixa by karkot doesn't do anything. There is no shvua by karkot. This is where the problem arises, which is, Einish Baima Kvirat Shvod Karkot is generated from a limit of klal, upratu klal. We actually saw it back in Baba Kama and Perek Merube. We saw these part of it, and we'll see it again in other Masechtot, the limudim that say that there are no shvuot to buy shibud karkot for a number of different places. There's no kefel, there's no other items. They all learned out of this klal upratu klal. The problem with that is, the alternate view is that it's not a klal upratu klal, but rather a ribui, miut, uriboy, which is the school of drasha that Rabbi Kiva subscribes to. And the Gemara Baba Kama told us that riboy and miut, uriboy says ribakol. You include everything. The miut is mimayit one thing. Shtar. That means that you do take a shvuah on karkot. So how can this be in Rabbi Kiva's position that we're suggesting over here that havilei shtar shibud karkot, venish baim akfirat shibud karkot? We're going to see again that the Gemara is going to bring this in a different version that makes this the position of Rabbi Kiva as well. That's why they want to change the girsa to Rabbi Yaakov so that this is not a stira within the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Tosafot deals with it by saying that maybe Rabbi Kiva has some other miut for karkot. He's memayin shtarot from the ribo miut to riboy, but he has a miut for karkot from somewhere else. He doesn't know where it is, he doesn't know what the limud is, but maybe Rabbi Kiva has that miut. The Rashba deals with that differently and says, the Gemara just gave two answers here. One answer from Shimon Lazar, and one answer for Rabbi Akiva. Maybe the answer for Rabbi Akiva will be, shtar makes it different over here. Shtar makes it different, so the halach is not your classic case of halach, and that's why you don't take a shvua. Inami, you don't take a shvua on shibud karkot, that's only applicable for Rabbi Shimon Elazar. That's not a reason for Rabbi Akiva, that's a reason for Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So that's how the Rashba deals with that problem in the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Tosfot asks over here, according to the one who says shibuda do raita, then moda mixa da taina lama nishba. Anytime you have a case of moda b'miksa, why should you have to take a shvua? Ha kufir shibud karkot. It automatically generates a kfira shibud karkot. That means that it should not be subject to a shvua at all. Because he believes that the shibud karkot is doraita. He says, v'yesh lomar, shemachol lo shibud. Either the possibility is that he forgave the lien in this case. O she'en lo kal karkot, afilu mimishabde. But it's a case where he has no land whatsoever. Even land that's encumbered to another party or been given to another party that was sold away to another party. So you can come up with cases where the karka or shibud karko would not be applicable. And according to that, shita of shibud oraita, those are the cases where you'll have moda b'miksat. Gemara says, ika de motiv miseifa. Some ask the question from the latter half of the braita. Rabbi Kiva, Marino, Ela, Kame, Shiva, Beidau, Patur. Taima, Dama, Shalosh. The reason is because he said three. Ha, shtayim, chayav. The reason that he's patur is because he said three, which makes him into a meshiv aveda, and therefore he doesn't have to give take a shvua. Had he said two, he would have to take a shvua, because then he's not meshiv aveda, then he's just admitting to what's in the contract. Vashtar, kikamodi be keilach dami, shtar where we make it the equivalent of heilach, and that's supportive of Rabbi Chia now. Shmamina, eilach chayav, that eilach chayav, that'd be a problem for Rav Sheshet. Lo, deolo meimelecha shtaim nami patur, that shtaim is also patur, according to Rabbi Kiva, you're patur by two. And why he says three, or he gives examples three, is because he wants to say that Rav Shimon Elazar's opinion is incorrect. Because he says even three is chayav, because it's modu b'miksat. That's what Rabbi Kiva is coming to say. That's no. By three, that is a case of meshiv aveda, not modu b'miksat. And I want to be up against that position of Rabbi Shimon Elazar. I think two is patur too. But I'm saying three is patur because I don't want to agree with Rabbi Shimon Elazar's opinion. So Achanami Mistabra, that makes a lot of sense. This Agadatcha Shtaim Chayav, Shalosh Heichi Patar Lei Rabbi Akiva. If you think that by two is Chayav, how could Rabbi Akiva say you're patur by three? Hai Irume Kamarim. The guy basically knows that if he admits to two, he's going to have to take a Shvua. If he admits to three, then he's patur. He's Meshiv Aveda, and he's believed. So the guy is going to do this. He really owes five. Now he has to think, do I admit to two or do I admit to three? If I admit to two, I'm in a bind. I'm going to be chayav eshvua. It's going to force me into a position I have to pay the whole thing. So what does he do? He says three. Because three gets him out of anything. Now he just pays three and he's believed and he gets better treatment in the Beit Din. So therefore, sabar, ki amina shtayim bina ishtabuye. If I say two, I'm going to have to take a shvua. Ema shalosh, davi kameshav abe, davi pater. Elishma mina shtayim nami patur. It has to be that Rabbi Kiva thinks that Shtayim is patur and Shlosh is patur. Elakash of Rabbi Chiya, that causes a problem for Rabbi Chiya. Shani Otam to come Isayle Shtara. Here it's different. This is a new classic case of Halach because the Shtar is backing up the claim. Inamim Shum Davle Shtar, Shibud Karkaot. The Shtar has a lien on property. Ve'inish Vayma Kfirat Shibud Karkaot. And this is what I discussed before. This is even within the position of Rabbi Kiva we're saying this. And Rabbi Kiva doesn't have this position, and that's why you have to reconcile or deal with that issue, which is what we just discussed before. Meitiv marzucher breder Rav Nachman. Tano kelim v'karkot. It's a Mishnah in Shavuot. The claimant comes and says, you owe me utensils, and you owe me land. Hode v'kelim v'kafar v'karkot. He admits that he owes the kelim, but he denies the karko. Hode v'karkot v'kafar v'kelim. He admits to owing the property, but denies the kelim. Patur. There in that case he is patur. Because in that case, he has nothing where he's bodeh b'miktzat. Because either completely agrees about the karka and denies the kelim, or vice versa. Hodeh miktzat karkot. If he admits to a part of the karkot, he says, yeah, I owe you half the land that you're saying. Patur. Why? Because there's no shvua by karkot. Mitzat kelim chayav. If he admits to owing a portion of the kelim, then he is modeh b'miktzat, because the guy has a full kelim of kelim against him. He's admitting to a portion of that. That's a modeh b'miktzat. Taima de kelim v'karkot. The reason in this case, which is what you want to understand, is that why is he patur in these cases, is because the two claims, one deals with kelim, one deals with karka. De karka lav bat shvuahi. Karka is not subject to a shvua. What that means is, it's as if karka is sliced out of the case. So in the case where he makes a claim for karka and kelim, if he admits to the kelim and denies the karka, then he is basically not a modeh b'miktzat, he's modeh b'kol. Karka is carved out of the case because there's no shvua by karka. So the only thing we're dealing with kelim, and he admitted to all the kelim. Or the other way around. If he admits to the karka and denies the kelim, karka is carved out and he's kofar bakol. As a kelim of kelim, he's kofar bakol. He doesn't have to do anything. If he admits to half the karka, again, karka is not subject to modeh b'miktzat. It's out of the case. If he's modeh b'miktzat a kelim, that's the only case where you have modeh b'miktzat. What the Gemara infers from that is, taima de kelim v'karkaot. V'karka la bachuayi. That's only because the composition of the claim is karka and kelim. And karka is just not subject to a shvua. Ha kelim mikelim drumia de kelim v'karkaot chayav. We would infer from here that if you had a case that was similar where you had two claims of kelim, the composition was not kelim and karka, but composition was kelim A and kelim B. In that case, you would say chayav. That would be a case that you would require a shvua, would be modeh b'miktzat. Gemara says, hey chidami, what is the scenario where you have a claim of kelim and kelim? Lav damar lehelach. Isn't it a case where he says to them, yeah, these are yours, take them. And the other ones he makes a denial about. Shma mina ilach chayav. And that would imply that chilech would be chayav. There's two steps in the inference over here. One step is that only kelim and karka would you be patur. It would not be considered modeh b'miktzat. But in a case of kelim and kelim, it would be deemed a case of modeh b'miktzat. Number two is, what is the case here where we have kelim and kelim? It's a case of halach. Where he asked him for a number of items, and he says, yeah, these are yours, take them. The other ones, that never happened. And you see here that that would generate a chiyuv of a modeh b'miktzat. Lo, dolo meim lecha kelim and kelim, nami patur. Kelim and kelim would also be patur, not just kelim and karka. Vadik tani kelim and karka ot. So then why did the Mishnah use the example of kelim and karka ot? If kelim and kelim are patur, that would be a bigger chiddush to teach us. Hagamashalan odeh b'miktzat kelim chayav af ala karka ot. That is to tell us that in that fourth case, where he admits to a portion of the kelim, and he is deemed to be a modeh b'miktzat, we make him take a shvua on the kelim and on the karka. Once we have a modeh b'miktzat and a chiyuv d'oraita of shvua by the kelim, we make him take a shvua on the kelim and the karka. Even though karka usually is exempt from shvua, that's only if it's karka itself that is generating the shvua. If we generate the shvua from another item, then we can migalgel the shvua onto the karka. That's what that Mishnah is teaching you. So, my Kamashvalan, what is it teaching us? Zokakin. The concept of Zokakin, which means that it draws along. The Shvua and the Kelim draws in the Karka to be subject to the Shvua. Mar says, Tanina, that's an explicit Mishnah in Kiddushin that we learned together. Zokakim ani chasim she'en le'em acharyut, ani chasim she'esh le'em acharyut li'shavaleem. There, the Mishnah is talking about differences between real property and non-real property. And over there it says, the kinyanim for real property are different than those of non-real property. And if you're koneh real property, agav the real property, you can also be koneh non-real property. Then the Mishnah goes the other way around and says, well, non-real property also affects real property in some instances. Non-real property is subject to a shvua. Real property is not subject to a shvua. But zokikin, which means that when you have a shvua on a non-real property, it draws along or demands a shvua even on the real property, even on the karka, on the real estate. In that case, so Mara says, why do you need this Mishnah to learn it through an inference? You have an explicit Mishnah in Kiddushin. Mara says, Hocha Ikar, the Mishnah we're quoting is from Masechet Shvuot. That's the main place of Shvuah. That's the primary source. Hatam in Kiddushin Agav Gerora Naspa. It's being brought down as a sidebar. That is because the Ikar statement in Kiddushin is about the fact of Kinyanim. That's what those Mishnayot are about in the first parak in Kiddushin. How do you make a kinyan on real estate, real property? How do you make a kinyan on non-real property? And then what's the interplay between them? Once we discuss the interplay, we just brought as an aside, there's another interplay between them, which is this issue of Shvuah. But that's brought as an aside, not as a primary source. In Shvuot, that's the primary position. So yes, it is repeated in Kiddushin, but it's repeated in Kiddushin as an agav, not as the primary issue of the Mishnah. So it says, Ulamanda amar elech patur. Amay yitzrik kra demute karka mishvua. Ha, kol karka, helachu. Every type of karka is the equivalent of case of helach. It's a very interesting question, which is, if helach is patur, there's no such thing as motive and mixat by karka, because helach, karka is always a case of helach. Helach says, it's yours, take it. Karka is always in that position, because karka doesn't move. So if he says, yeah, this is your karka, that's equivalent of saying helach, take it. Because the karka is in the possession of the owner immediately. It's as if in their position. So the Gemara says now, if helach is patur, then why do I need a pasuk to tell me that karka is not subject to a shvuah? It won't be subject to a shvuah because it's the equivalent of helach. And therefore you'll never have a case of modeh b'mikzat by karka. Amar lecha, itzter kra, eche dechafer ba borut, shichimu me'arot. There is a case by karka where you need this, is where he does damage to the land itself. Not that he stole the land or the land was deposited with him for Shmirah. It was a case where he does damage physically to the land. In that case, he can't say Helach. He can't say, here, take it back, it's yours. Because he changed the topography, the nature of the land. He did damage, so he's got to rectify that damage. And so therefore, you can't just say Helach. So that's one case where Helach won't work, and that's why I need a posuk to tell me that Karka is not subject to Shvuah. Inami eched etanu kelim v'karkaot. Or I need it for the case where he made a claim for him about kelim and karkot. Behold the kelim, and he admits to the kelim side, v'kafar v'karkot, and he denies the karkot. That's not a case of helach. It's more than the kelim, which are not helach. That's the part that he's always denying the karka aspect. He's more than the kelim. So the kelim aspect over there are not helach. So that's a case of mode b'miktzat. And why are you patur from a shvua? That's because karka is patur min a shvua. So we found cases where karka is not part of the helach, either because you did physical damage to the karka, or because it's a case where the karka is the denial aspect of the claim. You're admitting to the kelim, denying the karka. So you can't say it's a case of helach over there because he's not admitting to it. He's not handing it back to him. So how do I know that in those cases you don't take a shvua? That's what I need the pasuk in the Torah to tell you no shvua by karka. So there are cases of karka that are not helach. And since there are cases like that, I need the posuk to teach me that karka is potter from shvua, even those instances. Okay, we're stopping here, 6 lines down on the top of Hey Amud Aleph.